Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Previously on the Talking Golf Getaways podcast,
I am a proponent of Pebble Beach. I think anybody who has the means should go play it at least once. And there are people who will fall in love with it who will want to go back as much as they possibly can. I was that way. But now, would I go back? I don't know. You know, it's fairly expensive. I might go try to find other things that would be worth that money, whether they be in this country or other countries, to put that money toward.
Hi, and welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach. He is indeed Darren Bunch out in California. Glad to have you with us. Always glad to yak a bit with Mr. Bunch. And from those couple of clips Darren has edited, it sounds like he might have a surprise for me. That's what it sounds like. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, thanks for making us a part of your regular podcasting routine. You can find us on iTunes and Audio Boom. And as you, of course, now know, at golftripx.com. You can also find us at Golf Trip Experts on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Darren, you can find at Golf Getaways on Twitter and Instagram. Me, at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E, throughout the online universe. Darren, you and I, the only way to put it, absolutely stoked to talk to our guest today, Lee Abamonte.
Oh, we definitely are excited to talk to Lee. He takes world traveler to a whole nother level. I know you love it when I say whole nother level.
Well, nother is one of my favorite non-words, so go ahead.
Also, knowing Lee, it's sure to be a colorful, salty interview, so you might want to be careful if you have the kids in the car. He is a personality, let's say.
Have we ever rated a podcast Triple X?
I don't know, man. I anticipate having to put explicit on this one when I post it to iTunes.
Oh, yeah.
I got to meet Lee. I followed Lee on social media for a long time. Last summer, I had the opportunity to meet him in person during the media trip up to Lake Tahoe, which, if you are a regular listener of Talking Golf Getaways, we talked about it with our friend Vic Williams in episode 149. We talked about all the Lake Tahoe. So if you want to go back and listen to that, you can definitely do that. So looking forward to hearing what I'm sure will be all kinds of great and probably more than a few crazy stories from Lee in a few minutes. But first, we start off this episode with the best place you've been, seen, or talked about this week. And Mitch, mine is a follow-up on our podcast, episode 151, which we just did a week ago, how much we're willing to pay for golf and whether we do it again, hence the earlier clips that I played at the beginning. I said some things, Mitch, on that podcast. And let me tell you, when it came down to it and I was faced with one of the very situations that we talked about on the podcast, it appears that I was just talking out of my arsehole, plain and simple.
Not the first time.
Because here's what happened. I was looking for a place to go. Travel is clearly limited. We can't get in the car. We've canceled all these trips. My buddy Mike Smee and I were thinking about where to go play golf. We talked about maybe going down to Rams Hill. Rams Hill's kind of an overnight trip. So as Rams Hill was getting ready to open last week and I was doing some research about what other places were doing in terms of carts and opening and social distancing, I took a look at Pebble Beach. And what I found out was Pebble Beach is open in the month of May. The hotels are closed. So you can go play Pebble Beach without the hotel minimum, which is what we talked about is really the killer.
Right.
For a lot of people who go. So as I was bouncing back and forth, Mike Smee, I took a trip to Pebble Beach a while back, and took some people, my buddy Chad Ramage as well. But Mike didn't get to go on that trip. So he's yet to play Pebble. So I say to him, well, what if we went and played Pebble Beach? What if we just went and splurged? It's $495 right now to play Pebble Beach. There's no caddies. You can't go in the golf shop. But you also don't need the hotel minimum requirement. So it's just what it is, $495, just you and the golf course. Go play Pebble Beach on an afternoon. So we pulled the trigger. And we decided we're going to do it. So everything I said about whether or not I would go back to Pebble, apparently it was just for radio, because when the opportunity was there, we pulled the trigger on it. So then it became a bigger thing. We were like, well, there's no reason we shouldn't invite our other two buddies, Jason Moyes, who's been on the podcast, and then Chad, who I just mentioned, and do our Bummage Smoys Cup match from Pebble Beach. Jason is actually getting ready to move out of the state. This might be our last opportunity to do one of these cups for a long time, these cup matches. And so now all four of us, this Thursday, May 14th, are heading up to Pebble Beach. We're going to play Pebble Beach all afternoon, walk, carry our own bags. I just cleaned up my Park Ridge pull cart, which you know well from the day we played at Goat Hill Park with my dog Ragsy. Mm-hmm. I've got it already. I'm going to pull it along, and we're going to go play Pebble Beach, man.
You are not.
Yep.
You are not. All right. I'm going to get people ready for Lee Abamonte right now.
Yes.
Get the fuck out of here.
I don't know what to tell you.
That is unbelievable. No, I think it illustrates a couple of great points, which is that the hotel and the lodge and having to stay there is indeed a killer for most people.
Sure.
Because you can say to yourself, all right, even if I'm not flush and I don't have a ton of money, this, if ever there was a time and you have not played Pebble Beach, clearly you have tons of money, so it's not an issue. But if you don't, and this is the time.
That was exactly the argument I made too, because it will be Mike and Jason have not played it. Chad and I have. And I was like, if you're ever going to do it, this is when you do it, because it's five something actually, I think, normally now.
Wow.
Plus if you took a caddy, there's another 100 to 150. Plus if you stayed over, that's another 400 a night minimum probably.
Right.
And it becomes a $2,000 trip, and in this case we're going to go do it, and I think it's going to be worth every penny, not just because I like Pebble. At the same time, just having a group of guys playing Pebble with a group of guys that you love and love.
Yeah. And you're going to have the cup there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a double lifetime experience.
And as an update, you know, we Chad and I own the cup currently. And so, our goal is to win this one so that Jason does not take the cup with him to Wyoming. That's where he is relocating to.
Oh, boy.
And I will do everything within my power to make sure that the cup does not have to live any of its days in the state of Wyoming.
All right. Well, hopefully there'll be some kind of weird witchcraft spell put over your putter before you leave on Thursday. Let's move on. We want to get to Lee, because this really is an episode we're excited about. As far as best places you've been, seen, or talked about this week, I'm going to start, because it's going to be pretty tough to top what you just said, I have to admit. But I did have a great couple of days, and I got a chance to play two of my favorite courses on the planet, literally on the planet, and that would, of course, be Caledonia and True Blue here in Myrtle Beach, two great Mike Strands courses that we've talked about endlessly on the show. But I got to play them with Ben Grian, our good friend from the Twitterverse, at Back9Ben, who had never played either of them. And he's a big Strands fan. He lives in Virginia. He's experienced Royal New Kent and Stonehouse. And he's a local golf advisor in Virginia. And I was really excited to play his first trip. And so we got to play True Blue the first day. He absolutely loved it. We then went over to Caledonia the next day and got to ride Finn scooters. And you've heard me talk about them. And the two of us were like stinking kids in a candy shop. I pull into the parking lot at Caledonia. Ben has already gotten his fin and his bag is on it. I take my bag out of my trunk and Ben starts to ride around the parking lot. Not to get anywhere. Literally, he just starts riding around the parking lot. And the day was spectacular. The course was unbelievable. But the experience on the scooters is so off the charts that I can never talk about it enough. If you're not walking, which is still my preferred way to play, this is the way to go. And Ben echoed that, wrote a great review in Golf Advisor about it. And at the end of the round, I thought I was going to lose him. I thought he was literally just going to keep riding this thing. I thought he was going to take it back to Virginia.
You guys had some great video going of that, including one where he revved it up and I thought he was going to run you over.
Oh, you mean where you put on social media that the only downside of the fun was running over the 90-year-old guy?
Yeah, yeah, I may have misestimated your age a little bit.
We actually, Ben's heard to me when he read that, and he said, you know what we should do? You should get in one of the bunkers and just get on the ground, and I'll ride by it. And
that's
and we forgot. We were having so much fun, I forgot. But anyway, that was one great thing. And then there was another great thing that got me and you really stoked, and I hope other people.
Oh, and this is under breaking news. This is under
breaking news.
Wow.
Our friend Ryan Ballingy at Golf News Net and does tons of stuff with us with Golf Trip Experts. Ryan has been working behind the scenes, secretly, covertly, on an incredible trip to Ireland, Northern Ireland, that he has put together. And it's a go. Assuming the world is in a good place in August 2021, we are going to be taking a trip with some followers, with some listeners, to Ireland and Northern Ireland. And it's going to be spectacular. Obviously, it's more than a year away, but I'm already not sleeping. I could be really tired by next August. But it's you and me, Ryan Ballingy, and places like Royal County Down, Ardglass, Portrush, Port Stewart, The Island, Port Marnock, Bushmills Inn, Slieve Donard, Fitzwilliam, great places to stay. Ground transportation is going to be included. Spots are going fast. I think that Ryan said already half of them are gone. So if you're listening to this and you want to find out more, go to golfnewsnet.com, check it out, and hopefully you can join us because this is I've played in Ireland. You've gotten to play these courses and stay at some great places. I have. This is a bucket list trip for me, and I know a lot of people. So to me, that was the most exciting thing I actually saw the whole week.
It's like my greatest hits in some ways. I've played all of these courses except the Island, which Eric Hart, our friend, the mobile golfer, says is just fantastic. He sent pictures, and I've always regretted not doing the Island when I was there on my trip a few years ago. Also, we've talked at length on the podcast about Ardglass. It's in my top 10 golf experiences for pure fun. I just there's something about that craggy coastline and the castle and the halfway house that's almost right up against one of the greens. And I can't speak highly enough about Ardglass. And Mitch, I gotta tell you, it's not on the itinerary, but Castle Rock Golf Club is not far from the Port Stewart, Portrush area and has one of my favorite 9-hole courses that we've talked about, the Ban. B-A-N-N. I never know whether it's the Ban or the Bon. But one of my favorites anywhere in the world, Jason Deegan and I from Golf Advisor had a great time out there late one afternoon. So who knows? You and I might have to skip a meal and sneak over there for some late night fun, kind of like we've done over the years, most notably when we were in Scotland and we played Nairn with Shane Bacon and Eric Hart until, you know, the sun descended over the water. So, you know, we might have to do that. I mean, talk about running down a dream. I'm looking forward to this trip and just dreaming about this trip for the next year as we work out the group and the participants and all the details and maybe even add some more surprises. And like you said, check out golfnewsnet.com or get in touch with Ryan Ballingy on social for more information. For now, though, speaking of dreaming, let's get into our conversation with Lee Abamonte.
All right, Darren, you and I talk golf getaways, as you know, and a lot of other stuff. I have traveled a lot. You've traveled a bunch, pun intended. You've been to all 50 states, which is quite an accomplishment. Our Golf Trip X friend and partner, golf photographer extraordinaire Brian Orr.
Drink.
Has done a ton of traveling. And our other friend and partner, writer Eric Hart, has been to what I thought was an impressive list, 12 countries on 4 continents. He's played 592 golf courses, which is impressive, no matter how you cut it. I am still impressed by all of our travels and experiences, but it is nothing compared to those of our guests today, Lee Abamonte, whose bio refers to him as, if I may quote, an entrepreneur, multimedia travel personality, brand ambassador, travel expert and writer, author, and global adventurer.
That's a mouthful.
Now, those are just words until you really start diving into this stuff. Personally, I think he's selling himself short. That's the way I look at it, mostly because that doesn't include passionate golfer, which obviously we're interested in and we're about to talk about. Dog owner, we're going to make Hector a star if he's not already. I have a feeling Hector can't walk around New York without paparazzi following him. But most importantly to me, being from New York, growing up in New York, he's also a fanatic New York Yankees fan, which I can throw out all the other stuff, and then I would talk to Lee for an hour and a half about that.
Oh, but, my goodness.
Lee is, and I'll just run through this quickly, and apologies to Lee because he already knows this about himself, but among a list of things too long to go into here, the youngest person to visit every country in the world, which I believe said 321. I think he still has maybe four that he's interested in, as well as the North and South Poles. He's climbed Kilimanjaro. He's been featured on every major television network and channel and in every you name it important newspaper and magazine. And I could literally go on with Lee's bio information for about half an hour and probably still wouldn't have enough time. So what I suggest you do is go to his extraordinary website, which is really great. He's obviously put a lot of time and effort into it, and we're the beneficiaries of a great website, Lee Abamonte, ABBAMONTE.com. His social media haunts on Twitter and Instagram, at Lee Abamonte, and they are fantastic, especially the Instagram account. You can go down the Abamonte rabbit hole. There should be a hashtag in front of that, I think. That rabbit hole, and you can spend a ton of hours on some of the best content you'll see. We'll get into talking a little bit about that as we go, but I know Darren and I are both grateful to have him spend some time with us from New York City. Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways, Lee.
Thanks, man. That was some intro. I really appreciate it.
Well, you laid the foundation for it by living. So it's really, we thank you. Darren, I know you had a chance to meet Lee. You'll talk a little bit about that too, but why don't you get it rolling? I know you guys had a chance to spend some time together, which I'm jealous about.
Yeah, definitely. Lee, let's start off with, you know, the question that really all of us get when we're in the travel business, it seems like, you know, you started off in the financial world, but how did you turn traveling the world into a job?
You know, it was kind of by accident, and it was one of those things. I was just traveling because I loved it, and you know, whenever I could get some time off of my regular Wall Street job, which I had for, you know, about 8 years, and you know, I was pretty good at my job. And Wall Street's one of those things; it's a bottom line business. If you hit your numbers, basically, they don't really give a shit what you do. Am I allowed to say shit?
Sure.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh yeah.
They don't give a shit what you do. So you know, I was able to get more time than most people off, and because I was motivated to travel, and you know, I didn't just sleep late on the couch at home. I went places and did stuff and climbed mountains and this and that. And then back in 2006, I found out there was this record to be the youngest guy to go to every country in the world, and I decided to go for it. And then I started my website to basically document my journey to every country in the world. And, you know, after I finished, I started getting a lot of press without actually trying to do it. And then I was just like, hey, maybe I got something here. And then American Express offered me money to talk about myself, basically, and you know, to kind of represent their brand. And I'm like, wow, like one of the biggest companies in the world wants to like pay me to like talk about traveling and, you know, credit cards and this and that. I was like, yeah, sure, okay, cool. And then I was like, hold on, maybe I got something here. And then I basically just took some time and networked, and you know, before I knew it, I was working with a bunch of Fortune 500 companies, you know, making Wall Street money, just having fun doing what I like to do, just traveling, playing golf, going to sports games, and just being a dude. And, you know, it's amazing what you can do if you just do things colorfully and, you know, kind of smile and, you know, just act normal and be nice to people, you know.
You make it sound so simple.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to have a cool like shtick too. I mean, going to every country in the world in the North and South Pole is pretty cool, I guess.
So before you actually made the decision to say, "Hey, I got something here," you did all that stuff before you got American Express and other Fortune 500. In other words, you planned all that, did all that based on what you had accumulated during your Wall Street years, but then you just set off and did it.
Yeah. I was just doing it for fun. I'm the type of person, I'm just a goal setter. And like, you know, you got to remember, this was like in the mid to late 2000s. It was like before social media. And, you know, I mean, the internet was around, but I didn't really use it other than to keep my blog, which was essentially a diary that I just couldn't lose. And, you know, the funny thing about the internet is other people can see stuff. And, you know, the website just, you know, it grew. And then I got a Facebook page, I think in like 2010 or something. And I really didn't even care. I wasn't even really using it. And then I got like a manager at the time, and she set up like Facebook and Twitter for me. And, you know, again, I didn't really use it, but I saw the value. So then I started using it more. And then I started doing television a lot. And then I was doing like the morning shows. Like I had a regular segment every Monday on one of the major cable news networks. And that was huge for me, because if I could get the exposure that those morning shows give, you know, and talk about products and hotels and airlines and, you know, destinations, et cetera, you know, I could basically tell them how much I wanted them to pay me. And, but that all came later. Back to your question. Yeah, it was just, out of love of travel and just having a goal. And that's kind of how I roll just in general in life.
How cool. All right. We can obviously talk about the travel part of this. The logistics of it blow my mind. But that would be five other shows.
That would be a whole nother podcast.
You ain't kidding.
It would be, but this is, we talk golf getaways. We talk about golf. You know that. Let's dive into how golf fits into the travel. Since you're passionate about it, you do a ton of blogging and have done. And again, if you go to Lee's website, you can cash in on all that. How'd you get into the game, and how much does it figure into your actual planning?
You know, it's funny. I have an interesting relationship with golf. I was a baseball player growing up, and, you know, I went to college to play baseball, and I picked up a golf club for the first time at 15 years old. And I think I was 14 or 15. And, you know, I was like a power hitter in baseball, and I basically was like Dave Winfield. I just swung as hard as I possibly could and hope for the best. And if you've ever seen me play golf, that's how my golf swing is too. And it looks like a baseball swing. Everyone's like, "Did you play baseball or hockey?" And I'm like, "Baseball." But you know, it's about balance, and you just swing like crazy and hope it goes straight. But yeah, I started playing for about in high school, just for fun with my friends, back on the municipal course in Trumbull, Connecticut, called Tashua Knolls. And you could play 9 holes when you were under 18 for $4, or 18 holes for $6 when I was a kid.
Nice.
And I was like, you know, even I could afford that at like 14 or 15. And, you know, so I just started playing. And then I took about 15 years off. When I went to college, I didn't play again basically until I was in my early 30s. And, because living in New York City, it's difficult. And when I was working on Wall Street, I mean, I was working a lot. And then when I wasn't working, I was traveling, and I kind of just forgot about golf, to be honest. And then when I quit the second time and went to business school in Arizona, then I started playing golf again. And, you know, I just re-fell in love with golf, and I started playing a lot in Phoenix. And then I started traveling and playing, and now it's become a huge part of my life and even a part of my business nowadays, or at least before the plague, at least. And so, you know, hopefully coming back soon. So we'll see. But it's become a huge passion of mine. I've played in, I'd have to go through the amount of countries, I don't know, but at least 40 countries I've played in, maybe more. And it could have been a lot more had I done this younger, you know, if I thought about playing golf earlier, if I knew it was going to be a thing. But yeah, I just love it. And I've played, you know, if you look at the top 100 courses, I've probably played half of them. And, you know, and this is only in a handful of years now, you know, so it's just been a passion project, something I love. And, I love to hang out with my friends and make new friends and, you know, just play at the, I mean, golf courses are never in shitty areas, right? You're always in a nice place when you're playing a nice golf course. So that's kind of the fun of it. You can mix travel and golf together. And I have a fun line that I always like to say. Everyone's always like, "Oh, do you ever get tired of traveling?" And I'm like, no, travel's like golf. It's a hobby you can do your whole life, and it's never the same twice, no matter how many times you play the same course.
Exactly. True. We talk about that a lot all the time. You talk about that golf is always in good places, but we pride ourselves here at Golf Getaways at finding, kind of seeking out the quirky, interesting golf experiences wherever you go. The question I've always wanted to ask you, I didn't think about it last year when we met, What's the weirdest or craziest or just unexpected golf experience you've run across anywhere in the world in your travels?
I've played it. I guarantee you I've played it some places that no one else has ever played at least collectively. So my favorite golf story is that I played golf in Kabul, Afghanistan at a course called the Kabul Country Club. Now, it sounds lovely and all, and Afghanistan is a wonderfully tremendously beautiful country and all. I'm being exaggerating there, obviously, but the Kabul Country Club is a 9-hole dirt course that you have to have an armed guard. So I had a guy with like an AK-47 as a bodyguard as I was like teeing off on all the par threes. And when you get onto the greens, it's not actually a green, it's just dirt. And like somebody just dug a hole with his hand in the dirt and stuck like a stick in there, and you're putting on dirt. And meanwhile, you got this bodyguard like just chasing after you. It's just like an amazing experience. And that's my dog in the background playing with his toy, by the way. So
Hector.
But yeah, no, playing in the in Kabul, Afghanistan was a trip. And somebody had told me there was a course there. So that was really the main thing that I made myself do when I went to Afghanistan. It was a little weird because I never played with an armed guard before, but it was awesome.
Did you consider it fun?
Oh, my God. I had a blast.
Okay.
Here's my question. How did you set up a tee time? I mean, you weren't in the military.
Let's just say there was no other golfers on the course.
But did they assign you a guy when you get there? I'm thinking about pulling up to a place, taking your clubs, and then kind of walking up like we do at regular golf courses. But they say, okay, you're playing at 12-12, and here's the guy that's going to be going with you. He's not really a caddy. He's going to keep you alive.
Yeah. So what they have there is, so in order to visit Kabul, at least during the war, you know, this is like 12, 13 years ago, you have to set up a private security detail, and it's very expensive and super like a lot of bureaucracy to get through it. So I use basically the same people that like, if, you know, when John McCain went, the same guys that he used, you know? And, so like, I just told him exactly what I wanted to do. And really I was like, just show me around and I want to play golf here. So we just showed up and they set it up and they gave me clubs. And when I say gave me clubs, I had a pitching wedge and like maybe like a 7-iron or something like that. And then a putter. And that was it. Cause it was all par threes, you know? And it was just a trip, man. I have some cool pictures. There's an article on my site. I think I called it like Golfing Kabul or something like that, but it was a lot of fun. And, yeah, I mean, that was it. There was, let's just say you didn't have to wait on the tee. I was the only one on the course. But you're kind of in an exposed area. So that's why you need the bodyguard. You're right near like this, like kind of dam thing. So it was pretty wild. Some other pretty cool places I've played in that, you know, most people will never go, let alone play golf. There is the most, remote golf course in the world is on St. Helena, which is a small little island in the middle of the South Atlantic Ocean. And the airport just opened about a year ago there. And I was one of the first people to fly there. And I played 18 holes a couple times there because you have to spend a week there. You have no choice. It's a great little island. But it's a 9-hole course with two different tee boxes on each hole. So it's basic, you know, they say it's 18 holes, even though it's only 9, you play twice. A lot of fun. It's not that well maintained. So you're actually putting out of the bunkers or like rocks. It's a lot of fun. No, you should Google it. It's pretty cool. And I also played in the Falkland Islands, which was pretty amazing. That's off the coast of South America, between South America and Africa. And I played in Equatorial Guinea, which is a Central African country that's like the most corrupt nation in the world. And they have one golf course there, and it's actually pretty nice. And Equatorial Guinea, by the way, is famous because it's the only Spanish speaking country in Africa. And so I played there, and it was just such a trip, man. And you know, I played in like other places like Kenya and South Africa, of course, and you know, a whole bunch. But I just played in Cyprus like right before the plague happened, and that was wonderful.
Where'd you play in Kenya?
Right in Nairobi. Don't remember the name of the course, but it was up in like Karen, like the nice area of Nairobi.
Yeah, Karen Golf Club, most likely then. Yeah, one of my great trips we've talked about a lot on the podcast is my father and I went to Kenya, and and did like 4 days of golf, 4 days of safari, and probably the number one thing I've ever done travel-wise. It's such a cool country.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think Koepka played in a tournament down there, actually, I believe, when he was on that like weird tour where he played in like Kazakhstan and stuff
right,
like that.
Right.
I just want to jump in. There's a couple of things. There's two people I want you to connect with if you haven't already. Our friend Ben Grian, who I've already mentioned on this podcast before. Ben Grian, his golf experience when he really got into it was at Saddam Hussein's palace in Iraq. He was in the military, and he got better by hitting balls off the balcony into a green in a lake outside the palace. I think you and Ben would have a lot to talk about relative to Iraq and Afghanistan. And our friend Adam Ralston, who did something called The Longest Hole. Are you familiar with Adam?
Is that the one in
Mongolia?
Okay, I thought it was the one in South Africa. It was like a 1500. You know the one I'm talking about? It's like a 1500 yard par three.
Oh yeah, it's not a hole. Adam Ralston and Ron Rutland were two guys. Adam literally golfed the ball across the entirety of Mongolia. Just look him up. Look up The Longest Hole. You'll understand. He's a good friend of ours. He's been on the podcast. But I think you guys, this is the kind of stuff Darren and I feel good when we go walk nine holes at the course 20 miles away. I think you guys would have a lot in common. I really do.
So, Lee, we want to know your favorites of things. We usually do a thing called the Emergency Nine with these questions that we ask everybody. But we figured if we did that with you, it might be a full day of recording, given all the places that you've been. So we kind of came up with a lightning round. We're going to hit you with a bunch of questions. Answer them as little or as much as you possibly want to. The first one of those is, you mentioned that you came back to golf a little later in life and as part of this. What's the first place you can remember that you traveled to for golf?
It would have to be Scottsdale. And if it's not Scottsdale, because I started golfing again in Scottsdale, it would have been TPC in Ponte Vedra, because that's where my family lives. They actually live in Sawgrass. So probably there, even though I was technically going to see them, but I played Sawgrass a lot.
What's your favorite course or destination anywhere in the world? And for you, anywhere in the world is much more literal than most of the people we ask this.
Man, that's a tough one, because I played so many, and I played most of the good ones, I should say, in Europe and Australia, like Asia. I gotta tell you, man, I've played all over. I'd rather play Abandoned Dunes, like those courses up there, than just about anywhere in the world, save maybe the Monterey Peninsula. I think those are the two best golf destinations in the world, although Ireland and Scotland, of course, are amazing as well.
Now, you did a big trip. We're here at Golf News Net. We're doing a big Northern Ireland trip that we're planning for August of 2021. I'm starting to get people excited about it now, because we know that people are going to want to get away. And finally, once there is international travel, they're going to want to get out of the country. Tell us a little bit about you did an epic trip to Northern Ireland, right?
Yeah, man. That's as good as it gets. Northern Ireland, I think, not that Ireland isn't great, but Northern Ireland is unbelievable. First of all, if you're to ask me my favorite course, singular course in the world, the answer is Royal County Down. It's just a dream. And especially if you get nice weather. I was fortunate. I had, except for the day I played Royal Portrush, which is the hardest course I've ever played, and it's not even close.
Right.
But I feel like if I played it on a nice day, it wouldn't have been as hard. But I mean, dude, there was a par three. It was like 140 yards from whatever tee box we were playing. I had to use a driver because the wind was like 80 miles an hour in my face, and it didn't even come close to reaching. And I can I can kill a ball, and like it didn't even come close to making the green. That's how hard Portrush was when we played there. But I mean, the thing about Portrush is obviously everyone knows it because they had the Open there last year, but it's right on a beach, right overlooking the Giant's Causeway. And it's just this little place just right off the highway. The clubhouse is really nothing. I don't know if they fixed it up a lot for the Open or not, but I mean, I was there like 3 years ago, and it was just like a little, if you ever been to, what's the one in San Diego, the famous course there?
Torrey Pines.
Yeah. If you've ever been to the kind of no big deal clubhouse at Torrey Pines, it's like half of that basically.
Right.
And right across from Port Rush is another great course where they've had the Irish Open a bunch of times, Port Stewart. And those three, those two courses, along with County Down, and then there's what was the other one? Rasipana and
Enniscrone.
Enniscrone, thank you. Enniscrone is amazing. Rasipana is amazing. And then a little further down into Ireland, Port Marnock is awesome. And then obviously there's a million great courses down south. But the northern courses are just so great. And then the other thing that's great about them is they're kind of accompanied by awesome, like, kind of castles or inns or, you know, guest houses, places to stay that make the experience more memorable. So, like, County Down, I can't remember the name of the little, like, inn hotel kind of attached to it, but it's just so amazing, man. You're staying in, like, castles and, like, guest houses and inns. And, for instance, Port Rush, we stayed at the Bushmills Inn, like, the Bushmills, you know, whiskey distillery. They have, like, a little guest house there, and you stay there, and it's just, you just fresh whiskey, play golf, and just talk shit. It's great, you know. And like, and
sound like us, Darren, or what?
Oh man, yeah. We have Bushmills Inn, and Sleeve Donard Hotel is the one next door to the Royal County Down. So we have both of those on our itinerary as well. So I mean, that just that sounds awesome. Is there anything of all that you've done? Is there anything that's still on your golf travel bucket list? Where haven't you been that you want to go play golf?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, there's a trillion golf courses, right? So, I mean, there's always places. I mean, I'd love to play Royal Melbourne. What's the famous one in the south of Spain? Valderrama.
Valderrama.
I'd like to play Valderrama. The one where they had the Ryder Cup in France. But that one. And I've never played in Scotland. I've never played.
Wait. You've never played in Scotland?
No, I played in Scotland, but in Scotland, I haven't played Gleneagles or Carnoustie. So those two for sure. I played most of the other roto courses, but those two I have not played, and dying to play, obviously. Also Royal Liverpool, you know, whatever British Open courses I haven't played, I'd love to play. And the Mediterranean courses, man, like playing in Cyprus, it just made me want to play more down there. So there's some great courses in like Italy and France and Spain and Portugal. And the Algarve is a great place to play in Portugal. So, you know, man. Oh, and you know what else is a great course? Cape Kidnappers in New Zealand. That's a top 100 course. That's amazing down there. I've never played in Argentina, but they have some amazing courses down there. You know, I've been to Argentina like 10 times, but never played golf there. So yeah, that's high up on my list because they have some amazing courses. Obviously some great golfers come from Argentina, and you know, there's some money down there, so they have some nice courses. So yeah, and you know what I started doing recently is playing a lot in Mexico and the Caribbean, and I love desert courses, and obviously who doesn't like, you know, beachfront courses. So the Caribbean, a lot of these islands are putting a lot of money into some of the courses. Everyone knows Teeth of the Dog, obviously, in Dominican and Casa de Campo, which is great. But there's so many. Each island usually has like one nice course, and I try to play that. And I recently played in Puerto Rico, and they have some great courses down there, man. Like not just the Puerto Rico Open course, but whatchamacallit, they put a St. Regis in there and like a Ritz-Carlton Reserve, and they both have beautiful courses on them. You know, things like that. So a lot of money going into golf down there.
We all know, and those of us who love to travel and play golf, it introduces us to amazing people. We have all experienced that. Do you have one or two that stand out that you've come across in these travels that you just got randomly paired with?
Oh man, I play with some pretty killer people.
Aside from the guy carrying an AK-47.
Yeah. You know, I played in you know, a couple of celebrity tournament type things, and I played with Joe Pesci once. That was pretty cool. I mean, you know, crazily enough, he doesn't really like when you quote Goodfellas or My Cousin Vinny to him, but that was pretty cool. Played with former Houston Rockets coach Rudy Tomjanovich. You know,
he didn't punch you.
Never underestimate the heart of a champion.
He didn't punch you.
No, I'm not Kermit Washington,
right.
So
all right,
I didn't
all
punch
right.
me.
Just checking.
Yeah, I mean, actually played with in my group. Those are the two off the top of my head. I'm not like my buddy Patrick, who just got to play St. Andrews with Bill Murray, which is like unbelievable. You know, but I played like in a bunch of celebrity kind of pro-am things. And, you know, down in Cabo, I played quite a bit. And like Brett Hull, you know, he plays down there a lot. So guys like that. But in my actual group, probably those two guys.
Thoughts on Kvara? Did you play Kvara?
Dude, Kvara is killer, man.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. The only course down there that I like more than Kvara is El Dorado. And I'm fortunate because I have a couple of friends who are members there, so I get to play there. I mean, you can play fucking naked there if you want to. That course is just amazing. And their comfort stations are unbelievable. Like, I literally saw Michael Phelps, like, playing, like, in a Speedo, like, one time, like, because he just didn't give a fuck, you know? It's awesome.
Away from golf a little bit, what's the best thing you've ever eaten? And then what's the craziest thing you've ever eaten?
I'm a pizza guy, man. So, I mean, for me, the best pizza in the world is in Naples, in Italy, Napoli. And there's a place called Don Michele, which if you ever read or saw the movie Eat, Pray, Love, which kind of annoyed me that they featured it, but it's the place featured there. It's that good. It's really just, it'll bring a tear to your eye if you like pizza like I do. The craziest thing, you know, I get asked this a lot, and I don't know the name. There's no like name of what I've eaten that's the craziest thing. But if you've ever been to Asia and some of these like disgusting fucking street markets that they have there, you know, like Wuhan aside, I mean, they have all these like fish market, you know, like food things, and everything just sits out and this and that. And then they just make stuff, and you want to like, you know, have the local experience and fit in and feel like you're really like, you know, adjusting to the culture. So you just end up eating stuff that you have no interest in eating. And like, I've been so sick because of that. And I couldn't even tell you what it is, but some kind of disgusting seafood.
There's a great commercial for traveling and eating. I love that.
So I kind of stay away from markets. Everyone's always like, oh, I love markets. It's so the culture and everything. I'm like, fuck that. It's fucking disgusting.
Okay. Disgustingseafood.com needs to be my new URL.
It's fucking gross.
All right, let's move on. It's hard to move on to the next question.
I know.
It's tough to leave that one and go to this one. But I have a dog I love named Louie. Darren has Ragsy, who travels with him and plays golf. I'm not fortunate enough. Louie would be out smelling everything in everybody's backyard. But what about Hector? Has he been trained as a golf dog? Do you play golf with Hector ever?
No, Hector is a very undisciplined dog. I you know, I'm not exactly a disciplinarian with him. In fact, I just let him do whatever he wants pretty much. And he's the best, man. He's staring at me right now. He doesn't like when I talk, like if I'm on the phone or on a Skype or something like that, because he's not getting the attention. So as much as I hate the plague, he absolutely loves it because I'm here nonstop. And so it's been good. But I've never actually golfed with him. I would absolutely love to, but, you know, it would have to be a situation where I wasn't near like a highway or anything like that, because I don't trust him off the leash.
It would have to be in Mexico where you're playing naked and nobody's there.
Yeah, pretty much. But I'd like, where in Mexico you go chasing after some kind of scorpion or something that could like get him, so, or coyote or some shit. Like I said, he's like the mayor wherever he goes. Everyone wants to pet him because he's so cute, you know. But like, and he's really friendly. He wants to play with everybody, including other animals. So I'm just afraid he'd pick a fight with like a coyote or something.
Another question. You have pretty much covered everything you can cover on this planet. I mean, I know there's other places that you can still go, but nobody can really say what you've said about visiting every country, North, South Pole, climbing Kilimanjaro, all those kinds of things. What is left for you in a hopefully long life? Are you thinking about joining NASA, Mars, exploring other planets?
Mars, no. I mean, that's a one-way ticket. Fuck that. The space thing, maybe. Yeah. I actually spoke to Richard Branson about that about a year ago, and I was fortunate to be in an event with him and got to talk to him for a couple minutes. And you know, I was like, you know, if you want some coverage, and you know, you don't want someone to pay, you know, who doesn't want to pay $250,000, I'd love to go. And he's like, yeah, sure. I'm sure you're the only one. And So, I mean, going to space, I mean, that's interesting to me, but it's not like the end all be all to me. So I don't really care. But other than that, man, you know, I don't feel like I have any pressure on me at all, which is nice. You know, the thing about like trying to set a record or like do something like that, there's no pressure except the pressure you put on yourself. But like, for me, I like to do that because it keeps me motivated. So now I just kind of go where I want to go. And golf's a big part of like, you know, my kind of future outlook. And that's why I'm trying to do more of it and play more courses and, you know, just get better. And because it's something I get competitive with and like to play with friends. And I have a lot of friends that play golf. So it's nice to, you know, to do golf trips. And golf trips have become my favorite trips because, as you guys know, like you're planning that Northern Ireland trip, and I'm sure you've done a million others. There's nothing better than just hanging out with your friends, just fucking off and playing golf and drinking at night and eating good food and just talking shit, you know? It's the best.
Put that on my gravestone.
those exact words.
Speaking of gravestones, and I know you're not this guy. You're not, first of all, you're not like me who's 70, who's actually thought about these things. But is there any place that you could see when the day comes that you could do, and I'm doing air quotes here, retire? Is there some place you've found along the way that you could say, I could see planting a chair and a home here and maybe traveling a little bit, but I could really, really just hang here?
I don't know. The way I look at it now, I'm actually thinking about buying a house out west somewhere, whether it's in Scottsdale or Palm Springs or Vegas or Southern California somewhere. And, you know, I always say I want to live like I'm retired. And so, you know, move into a kind of a golf community. I don't really want to join a club, because then I feel like beholden to play there all the time. I like to play a lot of different courses, but I wouldn't mind living in a place where, you know, on a course kind of deal where I could play there, but I don't necessarily have to like be a member, you know, pay like $100,000 a year or whatever it is. But something like that, like live in a community like Palm Springs or Scottsdale where there's like, you know, 500 courses or whatever there is, and, you know, just play a lot. And, you know, within 2 hours drive, you could play other world-class courses super easy. And, you know, like Arizona or Vegas or even Palm Springs, they have good airports, you know, LA, good airport, San Diego. So yeah, you can get different places. So the answer is I want to live like I'm retired, but not actually retire.
As a guy who follows you on Instagram and even more so after you and I met up at Lake Tahoe last summer, I've seen you talk about some incredible, just insane places that you've stayed, including some kind of floating cabana in the middle of the ocean, if I remember correctly. You tell us a few of the best places you've ever stayed. And it doesn't necessarily, it can be with golf or without golf, whichever.
There's, you know, different types of places, right? So like staying at the Mount Falcon Estate in Ireland is like amazing, right? Like for golf and like staying in a castle, and like it's Tiger Woods' favorite place to stay in Ireland, you know, that's like fucking great. And that's like right up there, you know, but, or like the Old Course Hotel or something like that. It's just an experience, you know? But like resorts, I mean, there's some incredible resorts, whether it's over the water bungalows, like you were saying, like in French Polynesia or in the Maldives or in the Seychelles, or, they're even building them in the Caribbean now, to just amazing beach resorts. Places like Four Seasons in Maui is one of my favorites. Punta Mita, where they have a great golf course with that island green, down there in Mexico. I mean, those are amazing. You know, staying on some, you know, remote islands. I mean, there's so many. It's hard to pick one. I mean, city hotels like the Raffles in Istanbul is pretty amazing for a city hotel, or, you know, the Hyatt in Tokyo, that type of thing. So it's hard to pick one, but I mean, there's different types of awesome for different types of things.
That's a very good point. Was it in the Seychelles, the one that I'm thinking of, that you had to take a boat out to the place you stayed? There was like a slide on it.
Oh, that was the Maldives. Yeah, Maldives. Yeah, it's pretty sick.
That place, I dream of your pictures of that place.
All those places are pretty sick. I mean, they're like ridiculously overpriced, but I mean, it's like a thing you'll never forget, you know?
Yeah, we just spent an episode of the podcast talking about how much is too expensive for, you know, various things when it comes to golf and travel. And we said that very thing, that sometimes the price, you know, if it's something you're only going to do one time, you're going to remember it for the rest of your life. You know, spend any amount of money you can possibly afford to do something that, you know, will blow your mind, and you'll just dream about it forever.
I tell you what's too much money is Pebble Beach. Whether you pay the $650 to play, you know, they have five.
How's that, Darren?
they have five or six nice holes, and the rest of them are pretty pedestrian, you know. And they make you stay in that fucking lodge and pay like $1,500 a night, or you know, you can maybe walk on and pay $650 to play. It's absurd. So that's the one that I think is way too much. And it's a nice course. Obviously, it's a great course, but it's not $650 and then plus $1,500 if you got to stay there. You know.
How do you really feel, Lee?
You're gonna want to listen to the. To at least the beginning of this podcast when we post it, because we're gonna talk a little bit about Pebble Beach and some of the things that you just said. We talked about it a ton in the previous episode, and we're gonna follow up on a few things.
Do you agree or disagree?
I'm a big fan of Pebble of the experience that they do there, but I totally agree with you about like you're talking about the thing that really hurts the experience from a cost perspective for most people is the fact that they make you stay. On property as part of it, and that just takes the, you know, the already high price of golf and then just escalates it exponentially, you know, because you're having to stay two nights in a, you know, very expensive hotel as well.
Yeah, another one over there that I think is overrated, to be honest, is Spyglass. I mean, I think they charge like $450 or whatever it is for 18 holes and maybe more. And nice course. There's a couple great holes along the water there with the dunes and stuff. But other than that, I mean, I don't think it's that great. I think it's a little bit overrated and way overpriced. I mean, for me, nice courses, of course, but I think Poppy Hills is better. I think Monterey Peninsula is way better. And obviously Cypress and the Preserve, you know, there's some great courses over there that aren't in the same stratosphere in terms of cost, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You're definitely paying for history a lot with both Pebble and Spyglass.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So quickly as we close, let's talk about living in New York, because especially in these times that were unthinkable just months ago, when the pandemic was just getting started, you had a really good Insta story post about the odds being against people getting the virus, which is still really true when you look at the raw numbers. And this was while you were still traveling. If I remember correctly, you did the post while you were somewhere overseas. So to me, it's been interesting watching you and to see your evolution kind of from that to eventually wearing masks every time you go out of your apartment there in New York, to taking advantage of the isolation the way you have to show so many of the amazing sights and sounds of New York City itself. What's it been like just being at the epicenter of all this?
Well, to be honest, it fucking sucks. you know, I mean, there's no way around it. It fucking blows. And when I say that, you know, for me personally, I mean, everything I love has essentially been taken away from me. I mean, travel, sports on television and playing, you know, the gym, restaurants, bars, hanging out with my friends, like literally everything I love has been like taken away, you know? And I happen to live in the most densely populated place, like in America, where, you know, they've had more deaths and cases than anywhere else. And I live right next to the biggest hospital in New York City. So it's like a lot of sirens and, you know, death in the air. You know, it sucks. I mean, you go up to Central Park, there's a freaking hospital they built in the East Meadow up there. I mean, Jesus Christ. But at the same time, you know, New Yorkers are, you know, tough people. Like, we've been through a lot of shit. And, you know, you kind of take things as they come and you don't, like, let them, like, ruin your life, basically. It just, you know, it just is what it is. It sucks, but you just deal with it, you know. And with this whole thing, when it was getting started, you didn't know. You don't know what's going on, you know? And like, you hope you get the right information from the powers that be, like, you know, the president and the governor and the mayor and all, you know, all these things. But if the president is denying, you know, things, you know, you're like, okay, it must not be that big a deal. Even if you hate Trump, you figure he probably wouldn't lie, you know, when people's lives are at stake, or not lie, but just, you know, be indifferent about it. And then when you realize it's like a really big deal, then you think they would take more action. And I'm not just talking about Trump. I mean, the governor, too. I've been saying that Cuomo should have shut down New York State, New York City, and de Blasio, New York City a long time ago to not just flatten the curve, but like make it fall off. And if we had just done what they did in Italy and Spain, we would have seen a lot steeper decline. But they didn't do that. That said, It's hard because there's so much money at stake and people's livelihoods, and you know, unemployment's at a huge rate right now. And I mean, shit, I've lost. I wouldn't even tell you how much money I've lost because of this fucking thing. And you know, it just is what it is, and you just deal with it. And now we're in this ridiculous situation where everyone's just in limbo. It's like, what do you do? And then like, okay, we're gonna reopen, right? So then what? So you're gonna have to balance human life and health versus money, right? And the economy and jobs and everything. And it's hard, and it's not a political issue. It's just a human issue, because you need money, but you need to be healthy. And if people aren't healthy, the economy is going to go to shit anyway. So it's an interesting time to be alive. And, you know, I'm thankful that I'm healthy and able to do what I do. And, you know, I'm the type of person who doesn't just sit here and feel sorry for myself or anybody else. Just get out and do it. That's why I've been walking like 15 fucking miles a day. And, you know, trying to share my city with people, because everyone knows New York. You know, it's not like you live in like Wichita, like no one gives a fuck about. You know, you live in New York City. Everyone knows New York, or wants to go to New York, or has been there, but probably hasn't seen a lot of the places I've been showing them. And I've been having a good time doing it, and it's also good exercise. And you know, I have a lot of weird knowledge stuck in my head that I like sharing, and it's been fun for me.
As a travel expert, do you have any sense, any type of guess as to when we'll be able to travel internationally again?
Yeah, my guess is not this year. I think it's going to be a long time, actually. I think it's going to be into next year. And I say that with the possible exception of places like Mexico and maybe the Caribbean, because they're so dependent on Americans, you know, financially and economically, they might take the risk. The issue that, you know, we as Americans, we always think about, oh, who are we going to, you know, especially nowadays, like, who are they going to ban? You know, we're the ones with the huge infection rate. You know what I mean? So other countries don't want us going there, you know? And, you know, people seem to forget about that, the arrogance of Americans. I mean, maybe like England or some of these big cities in Europe maybe will take us, because, again, they need the money and, you know, they're so important to their economy. But, you know, we're not going to Asia. We're not going to Australia, New Zealand, you know, Africa. They're not letting us in. A lot of places in Europe won't let us in. And I think it's going to be Canada won't let us in right now. So I think it's going to be like that for a while. And, you know, until we really get serious about testing and this and that, it's going to be a slog. And the travel experience is going to be unlike it's ever been before. I mean, I read an article yesterday. They're talking about like 4 hours before your flight. I mean, you think I'm going to sit there for four fucking hours before I even get to board the plane in like full PPE, like just watching everybody like go through different screenings and stuff like that? No, I mean, it's a nightmare. That's why I think the road trip and domestic travel is going to really be the only way to go for the next, who knows how long, certainly the rest of the year. And we'll see what happens in the fall and into the winter, if there's going to be a resurgence, because that's the great unknown. Everything is unknown right now. That's the problem, you know?
Well, one of the great things about you is I have no doubt that you're going to persevere no matter what happens. And just to give you a little feedback on your Insta stories about New York, not that you need it, because I get the sense, call me crazy, that you're a fairly confident person.
Yeah.
But I grew up in New York. I spent my life right outside of the city. I lived in the city for 5 years from 25 to 30. I've been back tons of times. And I have to tell you, the Insta stories that you're doing on your hikes and your walks around are exposing me, somebody who's grown up there, to things that I never knew, literally. And it's a great feeling, not just for those of us who lived and may know New York or think we know it, but for people who aren't aware of those, they know Times Square, they know the Village, they know whatever they've heard, but there is so much more that I was not aware of, except that now you're taking me with you.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really appreciate that. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do is, you know, people live here their whole lives and they've been telling me that they never, first of all, never went above 110th Street, you know? So, I mean, people hear the word Harlem and they think like, you know, scary ghetto, you know, but it's actually super cool and nice. And, you know, you got to remember also, like back in the, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, even up to about the 70s, like, it was like a cool area, you know, like people were living there. And, you know, I mean, they had the New York Giants used to play, the Yankees used to play up there, you know?
Yeah.
And, it was a different era, and it's fun to see, it now, especially as there's been a renaissance in Harlem in the last 20 years. And, you know, things have been well preserved, and the New York Historical Society, or whatever they're called, has done a good job of keeping and preserving some of these old houses and monuments and stuff like that. And it's been a real pleasure to go up there and share it. And I'd seen most of the stuff that I've been showing before, because I'm like the type of person, I just do stuff. But there was a couple things that were new to me too, like hiking around Inwood Hill Park and mm-hmm. and things like that. I mean, that was just awesome, man. And it's just so much fun, and I'm happy that social media allows me to share it. And thank you for saying that. I appreciate it.
Well, it's really true. Some of those views and stuff that you, I was watching them this morning again for the second time. And some of the views, people won't believe that they're in New York, that that's coming from there. So thanks for that. Darren, I can't think of 40 plus minutes that have gone by in 152 episodes that have gone by as quickly as this one has.
Yep, definitely. I mean, Lee, it was great to have you on, and we hope to have you back more and more. And if we've all got time on our hands over the next year before we're traveling wide scale, hopefully we can talk a lot more.
Yeah, man. Whenever. I got some time on my hands right now, so happy to do it, guys. And hope to see you all soon. And you know, be well, stay safe, and all that stuff. And thanks again.
Well, you're talking about taking road trips, get in your car. It's about 10, 12 hours. Come down to Myrtle Beach.
Oh, is that where you are? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We have golf. And you have a room. You have a room here.
All right. Thank you. It's funny. Me and my buddy, Charlie, we were talking about taking a road trip down to South Carolina for that exact reason. And he's never been to Myrtle. So maybe we will. I'll let you know. Thank you.
There you go. All right. Okay. Thanks again to Lee. Remember, we talked about his Insta stories, Twitter account, at Lee Abamonte, both of those places. And go to the website, leeabamonte.com. It'll blow your mind. And then blow it again and keep blowing it the further you dive into it. You can keep hitting Darren and me up on social media at Golf Trip Experts. Rate us on iTunes. And again, we just thank Lee for taking some time. This has been really, really great. I'm going to leave you with this quote, which tells you all you need to know about him, and I think is particularly fitting as a perfect philosophy for us all today. This is what Lee said. I believe in globalization of everything, including people. I believe that I am a citizen of Earth. I believe that people around the world are, at their core, basically good and the same. I believe that more people should experience the world and the way traveling can open their eyes and minds to different and exciting things. I believe in just being myself. I believe in life. Keep running down the dream, peeps. So long.